Now. Real people, real opinions. Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
Ireland's classic hits radio.
One of those things that we're all kind of very conscious of at the moment when we're online is cybersecurity and all those kind of things, like, is Alexa and Siri actually listening to me? How many times have I picked up my phone and I was talking to somebody about a pair of Nike runners or something earlier on, and all of a sudden I pick up my phone, open it, and there's an ad for Nike runners. Is it listening to me? Now, we did speak to somebody before in relation to that many, many years ago, and they said, I asked them the question, you know, is Alexa listening? They said, well, that's the very reason I don't have an Alexa. Well, Lou Covey is a cybersecurity journalist and the chief editor of Cyber Protection magazine, which aims to make the technology of security understandable to everyone. One of the areas he's interested in is extortion. And he joins me now to talk about how people become victims of extortion and what to do if you do become a victim of it. And we'll explain to you a little bit more about what that is in a second. But Lou, hi, how are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Good, good. Look, I know you're the CEO as well of Footwasher Media, which produces engaging, independent content for the betterment of the world and the community. So that's always a good thing. But getting to sextortion, we did have a guy on the show about 3 weeks ago, and he was the victim of sextortion. He had gone onto a dating app and then sent pictures of his you-know-what to some woman, and, well, he thought it was a woman, turned out to be some guy in, you know, an internet cafe in Nigeria who tried to get a Bitcoin off him.
Yeah. I've actually gotten calls from some of our readers that have fallen into this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's insidious. It's gradual. But you know, it happens to everyone. Like, my favorite story is a guy who was a pastor, and he had been a former professional athlete, and so he was always interested in fitness things and looking things online, and he had an Instagram account, and some woman, supposedly a woman, contacted him and started a relationship with him, and then started sharing all of the bad problems that she had, and that her bills were too high, and so he sent her some money. And okay. She replied with revealing photos of herself. At least we thought it was her but we never saw her face. We just saw her body.
Yep.
and when he suddenly realized that, oh, this is a fake, I'm going to try and catch this person and turn her into the police. Well, that's where it turned around, because she ended up hacking into his computer, into his church's network, got a hold of all of the mailing list, and said, I'm going to reveal these pictures to all your board members unless you pay me $5,000.
Wow. Wow. And you know what it is? What I find, when I spoke to my guest come back a few weeks ago, similar situation. He met a girl online. She allegedly was from Ireland in Cork. She knew the places to go. She knew the local bars. It turned out to be he. She knew all the places and was even arranging to meet up. The whole lot. It was just before they got to the meat part where he thought he was comfortable to send pictures and stuff like that to her, and they got a bit sexual, that it all went pear-shaped, and he got a phone call the next day because he'd given his phone number, got a phone call the next day saying, I'm going to tell all your friends, I have all those pictures, I'm going to send them to everybody in your contact list, including your mother, unless you pay me a Bitcoin. But these people are very dedicated to what they do. They can bring somebody along for a few weeks just to make this money.
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, a lot of these guys, they buy kits. You can go up into the dark web and you can buy a kit that will explain to you how to do this and give you the technology to process it. And you have to agree to give 50% of whatever you take to the people you have sold it to. And the biggest seller of this is North Korea. In fact, that's how they finance their nuclear weapons program.
Wow. That's crazy, isn't it? So how common is sextortion? Is it a lot more common than we think? Because the problem is, we don't really get to find out too much about it, because most people would be so embarrassed that they're not going to tell anybody. But the problem is, if you pay them the half a Bitcoin or whatever it is they happen to be looking for, they'd probably do it to you again because they know you're vulnerable.
Yeah. It happens a lot. And the thing is, it's That part, the sextortion part, or where they're actually getting money out of you, like we've been talking about, is a fairly small part of it. Most of it is just people, online bullying happens a lot with teenagers, where a teenager will share a naked picture of themselves with a boyfriend or a girlfriend, and then they break up, and then that person uses that to get revenge by sharing it that way.
Well, I don't know what it's like in the United States, but we've just brought in legislation in the last 2 years in this country, and it's called revenge porn legislation. So that's now illegal to do that.
Yeah, and we have that here in the United States, but on a state-by-state basis. It hasn't made it through Congress.
Okay, okay. So it's quite taking quite a serious crime over here, and they've got ads on TV for it and everything else, because it all started with somebody, you know, breaking up in a relationship and then putting, you know, this poor girl's picture on, you know, Pornhub or something like that. And that it's now classed as revenge porn. But, I mean, I suppose sex is one of those things that you can always make money out of, whatever way it is, because people are humiliated by it.
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing. They shouldn't be. In some of the stories that I covered fairly recently, found out that 75% of men worldwide admit to occasionally, once, or constantly go to watch porn on the internet.
Yeah,
and that's one way the extortioners get in. Is there, you know, there that information is freely available through data miners. You can buy it, and you can use that to extort them. It's, oh, we caught you watching porn online. In fact, sometimes they don't even know if you have. They just, we caught you, and because 75% of men have said they do, they know it, they, oh, well, I'm guilty. Well, see, when you realize that three out of four men have already done this, what's the big deal?
But I suppose it's a big deal, isn't it? It's a big deal for, say, somebody who's in the public eye, like a counselor or, you know, a politician or somebody who's a pastor, for example, or a minister or whatever. It would be a big deal for them because their followers think they're holier than thou.
Yeah. But, you know, like Jesus said, all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God.
Absolutely. Now, you've covered presidential campaigns. You know, education, crime, religion, fashion, and software technology. So when it comes to presidential campaigns, cybersecurity is of the essence, isn't it? It has to be so important.
You would think so.
Well, you would imagine, you would imagine so, wouldn't you?
We're actually working on some special coverage about election security right now. And essentially, we had the problem in 2016. We had it in 2020. I know the UK is looking at what China is trying to do with their election process. The difference between those two elections and this one is that we know what's happening. We know who's doing it. We know how they're doing it. But how we stop them is another question.
So how are these people infiltrating campaigns, or, you know, how are they? We could talk about Donald Trump all day and what he has suggested in relation to voting and interference. But generally speaking, how do these hackers influence a campaign? Is it by postal votes, or, well, you know, that doesn't really happen in most places. It only happens in America because of COVID.
Okay, they don't have to actually access the campaigns, although they can get some interesting information from that. But they use social media. Mm-hmm. Social media has the algorithms have been designed to reach people who get angry about certain things, because if they're angry, they're more likely to share them. They're more likely to believe them. And once you get that, and that's essentially what China, Russia, Iran, and all the other actors are doing on the United States, and probably what they're doing in the UK, and maybe even Ireland. They are trying to influence voters by spreading disinformation that people will believe, and either get them to vote one way or to get them to not vote at all.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially what we've got to start learning is that whatever you see on social media is probably crap.
A lot of it is, yeah.
What is the old saying? 90% of everything is crap. Well, it's really true on social media.
What's that famous quote from Abraham Lincoln? Don't believe everything you read on the internet. That is a bit of a...
Yes. that's pretty much it.
But here's the biggest problem. The politicians are equally responsible for a lot of that misinformation as well.
Oh, they are. They definitely are. And you know, it behooves everyone to look for other sources. You know, I think it was Gallup Research came out with a report a couple of years ago that said 70% of the American public gets their news from social media.
Mm.
Only 16% get it from newspapers.
But there's a distrust. And there's a distrust of newspapers. There's a distrust. In this country, there's a distrust of the mainstream media now.
Yeah, well, that's you got to take a look at what mainstream media means. You know, like I just said, 70% of the American public gets their news from social media. So what does that make social media? Mainstream media, and they ignore. I prefer to use the term legacy media.
Okay.
I'm talking about broadcast news, not cable news, but broadcast news and print media.
But look at the damage that's been done to Fox and CNN. Both, by the way, they both obviously represent two different sides of the argument, but people have a complete distrust of both.
And they're absolutely right to. But the thing is, that's not mainstream media.
Mm-hmm.
Fewer people get their news from Fox, CNN, from cable media than they do from print media. But it's the stuff that's on cable news that gets shared on social media,
When it comes to social media, obviously there's a huge problem with, you know, actors, bots. And this is a problem, of course, Elon Musk tried to tackle initially, but it didn't seem to work. It actually seems to have got worse, if you ask me. You know, there's so many bots out there, these farms where they literally have thousands of phones on a wall. And if they want to get a story out that's completely untrue, they can put it out thousands of times. How can we stop that? Going forward, do you think we'll ever be able to tackle that problem?
It has to do with our ability or our willingness to listen or to look for other sources of information. To always, you know, people say it all the time, I've done my own research. Well, no, they haven't. They've just been watching social media stuff. You really need to look for other sources. Like, yeah, I admit, if I read one newspaper, I mean, if I read the Times of London every day, I would have a skewed view of the world. But I don't. I read the Times of London. I read the Washington Post. I read the San Francisco Chronicle. I read The Economist. I have a subscription to Al Jazeera. Okay, I spend not everybody can do this, but I spend 2 hours a day reading news and getting it from multiple sources. So I have a better feeling that I know what's going on in the world than when I talk to somebody who I know is only on social media. And it's amazing how little people know when they're on social media. And, you know, it takes us right back to the whole thing of sextortion. Okay. Mm-hmm. Most of the time, when you get extorted, they don't have the means to do what they say they're going to do. Most of the time, you know, it's all a big scam. So, you know, the attitude is just disregard this digital stuff. Go spend some time really realizing what it is the problem is, and the problem is that they are just trying to bully you into doing something you don't want to do.
They're bluffing. They're bluffing most of the time, probably.
Yeah, and the thing is, not to be a pity party, but I grew up, my earliest memory is being chased down the street by neighbor kids, okay? I was bullied horrendously all the way through high school.
As I was,
But one day, I just had it. I literally snapped, and I launched myself at the guy who was about 2 times bigger than me, screaming, and he just caught me in midair, and I'm flailing away. And he said, "What the heck is wrong with you?" But nobody bothered me after that, because when you stand up to them, or where you don't give them the reaction they want, the bully always backs down.
Yeah, because you're taking the power away, aren't you?
That's right. And that's exactly the phrase that you want to use. You've got to take the power away from these people, and the only people that can do it are the people being attacked.
Well, you know what, this guy, the guy I spoke to 3 weeks ago, he's an Irish guy. He was all over the newspapers because he'd been sextorted. What he did was he said to the bully or the sextorter, who was a Nigerian guy, he said in a internet cafe somewhere in Nigeria, he said, now he did report to the police and everything in the end, but he said what I did was I basically told him, okay, send the pictures to my friends and my mother, I don't care. And he hung up on him. And your man kept bringing him back and saying, I will send them, you know, I will send them. And he goes, far away. So he said, I'll tell you what, I've just told my mother myself, so there's no need for you to send them now. And he actually did tell his mother,
yeah.
And he did tell his friends, and so he took the power away, and that was the end of it. They went away, they never sent the pictures, it never actually happened. So it just took the power away.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, going back to my pastor friend, when he called me in, I went down to the house, and his wife was marching around their house with a baseball bat, smashing things. She was so ticked off.
Oh God!
And but see, this was 2 years ago, and they're still happily married because he owned it, and that's what I told him. I said, "Look, this is something you did. It was stupid, okay, and you shouldn't have done it, but it's done. Ask forgiveness, change your life." And what he did is he voluntarily shut down every social media account he had. He hasn't been back on it since. And maybe that was too extreme, but it was what got his wife convinced that he was serious about this.
Some of the go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, no, I mean that's it. You've got to take the power away. Sharing stuff online, don't believe it's ever private. It never is, because that stuff is on the internet forever. Let me tell you a story. There's a security journalist, a good friend of mine, Brian Krebs. He's kind of like the big guru for security. He wrote a story recently about a company called OneRep, which their business is going through the internet and scrubbing your data from everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
So great service. I use one of them myself, but this guy in particular, he'd take your information and then he'd go look for it and he'd wipe it out, right? But he was building his own database. And now and what Brian Krebs find out is that he is selling that data to other data brokers.
Wow. And is there a way of scrubbing out? Like, for example, you know, obviously I'm all over the internet because I work in a radio station and people are familiar with me.
Yeah.
But is there a way of scrubbing everything that mentions your name? Unless, of course, you've been involved in very serious criminality. Is there a way of scrubbing everything off the internet?
Yeah, there is. It takes some work. And, you know, the nice thing about the EU is that, you know, they make it a law. Yeah, the right to be forgotten.
But does it work?
And it's amazing yeah, it does if you use it. I just got a report that less than 2 million people since that law has been passed have asked for that to happen. You know, what's the EU right now? 44 million people?
Something like that, yeah.
And 2 million people, and only 2 million people have come forward and say, I want this scrubbed over the past 5 years.
Still a lot of people.
Yeah, it's a lot of people, but when I found out it was possible, I went, okay, yeah, I'll do this right now. I actually signed up with two different data scrubbers and had them take it off. All you got to do is just do a search for data scrubbing, and you can find all kinds of people online.
The other question, there's a slight delay between us. A slight delay between us, so that's why we sound like we're interrupting each other, and I do apologize. But somebody's just sent in a message here, right? I have lots of messages, by the way. Somebody, by the way, firstly says, not anyone who believes without question that the characters they meet online are real or are genuine people is naive and stupid. Even when I meet someone in person, they have to earn my trust. It's not that hard to do.
Yeah.
But there's somebody else wants to know, private messages on Facebook, Twitter, or any social media, are they private?
Not for the most part.
Okay.
WhatsApp went through a big advertising campaign about how your messages are encrypted. And that's what you're looking for. You're looking for encryption, okay? What WhatsApp doesn't tell you is that they're not encrypted unless you turn that on. It is set automatically to be unencrypted.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Now, there are, yeah, I know that.
Yeah, everybody listening tonight is now looking through their WhatsApp on the settings as you're saying that, but go on.
Yeah, well, I won't use WhatsApp. I don't use any product from Meta except for Instagram, and Instagram is highly curated. I only have friends on that. That's it.
Yeah.
But I do prefer an app called Signal. It's free.
I'm familiar with it.
It's run by a nonprofit. It's a nonprofit organization. I like it very much. The messaging system on that Apple puts out on their phone, they've just added encryption as a default setting. So that's encrypted. So yeah, you can do it, but you've got to check on the controls and make sure that it's turned off. I mean, it turned on.
And what about this new messaging system? Of course, the Twitter or X, as it's now called, you can now call each other. And, you know, and you can send messages without actually, obviously, you know, revealing your phone number to anybody. Is that encrypted?
I'm not exactly sure. I don't think it is. But I'm hard to find out because Elon kicked me off of this 2 years ago because I was talking to him or tweeting about his lousy encryption program.
And he hasn't let you back on since.
I take that as a badge of honor to be kicked off because I pissed off Elon.
the other thing as well when it comes to cybersecurity, right? I mean, the big thing going forward is AI. And, you know, AI is going to be the future for the young generation. They're going to get their information from AI. It's going to assist them to do their, you know, their essays and their whatever thesis or whatever it happens to be they're doing. There's great big arguments going on about AI at the moment. AI is only as good as those who put the information into it. And if those who put the information into it have a certain narrative or a certain way of thinking, well, that's what we're all going to be fed. Do you have a concern going forward about AI in general?
In the direction it's going right now, and if I may make a plug, if you go on to cyberprotection-magazine.com and sign up for a subscription, it's only $25 a year. We have a special issue on there on AI and some of the security issues are involved with that. But AI has been around for a very, very long time. Pretty much every semiconductor designed today is designed with an AI called synthesis. Okay. So there are very good applications of AI. And when it's applied in a specific way, it's a great tool. But I have great problems with the generative AI technologies, like OpenAI and what Google is doing, or whatever it is they're doing this week, because it's the technology world has this philosophy, and it's actually been stated by Sam Altman, the CEO of OpenAI. It says, first we're going to build it, then we're going to figure out what to do with it, and then we'll make it safe. Okay? So that's, you know, fire, ready, aim. Okay? And that's the basic problem. There are so many things going on with generative AI. Takes an enormous amount of computing power, which means it takes an enormous amount of energy, which means it takes an enormous amount of water, okay? And Altman has said he's going to need $7 trillion in investment in order to make the product that he wants to make. That's a significant problem, especially when what he's making doesn't work the way he says it is. There's a book out called Not With a Bug, But With a Sticker. It's written by a data scientist from Microsoft, of all places, who claims that 50% of all generative AI data sets are corrupted. That's the cause of the hallucinations that these things have. So you've got a 1 in 2 chance of getting the right stuff back. That's why I...
Well, isn't that the problem Google had? Google had to take their one back down again a couple of months ago. And to give an example, which we mentioned earlier on the show, on the Google AI, they're going back in February. We had a very important referendum here in Ireland recently. And before the referendum was even run, Google AI was telling us that it had already been won with a landslide yes vote. Now, it turned out to be a no vote landslide, so AI was wrong. But it was almost like AI was now becoming psychic.
Yeah, and it's that's scary to me, because when we get to the point where we're relying on it, that means, you know, half of the time we're going to be wrong, which, I don't know, that might be better. I mean, you know, Winston Churchill said about the United States government that they will invariably do the right thing after they've done everything wrong.
So, yeah. And the other thing, I suppose, with AI is bias as well. Again, it's who puts the information into it. The end user as well as developers.
That's a big problem. I actually tried to write a book with a data scientist about developing ethical AIs. And 6 months into it, we had to go back to the publisher and say, it can't be done. Mm-hmm. Because you cannot eliminate the bias of the people that are putting it in.
And I gave an example of this earlier on. If you go into ChatGPT, for example, and you say, write me an essay on why human beings are not responsible for climate change, it won't do it. Even though there are scientists in the world who tell you that, rather than giving you an essay on, well, there are two sides to the story, you know, some people say this and some people say this, it won't do it. It goes against its policy. So that's wrong. That's not the way. We don't want children to be raised, you know, listening to one side of a story constantly all the time and not to be able to critically think.
Exactly. And that's the problem of using generative AI in an educational setting. I mean, it's great to, it's a really good job on grammar, but I've actually gotten to the point, I have an 80% rate of identifying.
Oh, we're losing your line there. Yeah, we're losing your line there a little bit, Lou, so just move your head slightly. Okay, and the final thing is, a lot of people talk about, you know, their mobile phones and Alexa and Siri and, you know, these kind of, which is essentially AI to some degree as well. And they say, okay, there's my mobile phone sitting on the counter. It's in, you know, sleep mode. I'm talking about, God, I'd love to go on holidays to Florida. And then I pick up my phone, I start going through Facebook, and all of a sudden ads come up for holidays to Florida. So is your mobile phone or Alexa, are they listening to you?
No. Well, Alexa, yes. The mobile phone, no. But at the same time, you can go into your Alexa app and you can see what it's recorded.
Oh, can you?
Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah. Yeah, if you've got your whatever they call those things. I do have a couple in my house.
Okay? Yeah.
And it's controlled by an app on my phone. It's the Alexa app.
Yep.
And you can go into the settings and you can actually see what it has recorded, and you can delete it.
Okay.
And I also believe there are controls in there about what it can collect on you.
But because the thing about it is, we all go into these apps. When we buy these machines or this technology, you know, when we go in, obviously we have to go into the app to set up the software for it. And we just click, yes, I agree. Nobody ever reads it. Nobody reads it. We just click, I agree.
Well, and I have a real problem with that. And I'm actually talking to legislators in the United States about that there should be a button that you can click and say, no, you cannot sell my data. And even there's another book out called Data for All, where the author is suggesting that everyone be paid every time somebody sells their data for whatever reason. He thinks we could make up to $600 a year per person doing that, because that's how much it's being sold. So, but there should be an option to say, okay, I want to use this, but you can't have my data. Click. But still be able to use the service. I mean, the whole reason people just go ahead and accept yes is because it's the only way they can get to use the service. And that should not be right.
Okay, finally, if most people go into their iPhone and go into their settings and then go to passwords, so where your phone stores all the passwords for your favorite websites or your banking or whatever it is that all your passwords are saved, so you just have to look at your phone. And nearly on every single password, it'll say, this password and username was part of a data leak. Please change. It says that regularly.
Yes.
Now, I've been reading online about this, and they said, generally speaking, it's usually quite harmless. It's usually that it recognizes the password. It may not be associated with your name, but it recognizes the password, and that's why it just tells you to change it. Why are we suddenly seeing so many passwords and usernames being part of a data leak? Are these mega companies like Meta and Twitter and banks, are they not secure enough to hold on safely to your information?
Well, they might be secure enough, but the fact of the matter is that that's how they make their money, by selling that stuff. Bottom line,
they're intentionally leaking it.
And it's completely legal.
So are you telling me that like Meta and Twitter can sell my username, my email address, and my password to another company without my permission?
Absolutely.
Wow.
Now, they may not be able to do it in the EU, and there are certain states here in the United States where there are laws against that, but there's nothing stopping them from selling it to data miners in Vietnam.
And what do they do with that information, Lou? What does some lad in the middle of Vietnam want my username and password for? What are they doing with that information?
Well, sometimes they use it legitimately to sell you stuff. Because part of the problem I have with Amazon right now is most everything that comes across is coming from China, and it's not as good as what it is I'm actually looking for.
Yeah, true.
They're using that information to figure out how they can sell products and services to people in the U.S. and the EU. Okay. But on the other hand, they're also using it for nefarious issues. Yeah, they can take that data and run it through an AI, and they can find the people that are most susceptible to misinformation. And with that, they can influence elections in those countries. That's exactly how Russia did it. That's exactly how China's doing it. Because they're not stealing this information. They're buying this information. And it's cheap.
Well, listen, I'm so fortunate I could talk to you all night, but we've run out of time. Chief Editor of Cyber Protection Magazine. Go ahead, Lou. Go ahead.
You can call me back anytime.
Okay, well, we will. We will, because I find it a very interesting conversation. There's so much more I could ask you. Lou Covey, who's the Chief Editor of Cyber Protection Magazine. Don't forget, by the way, if you want to go online, you can. It's cyberprotection-magazine. So cyberprotection-magazine.com if you want to go online, and you can get all the latest updates on cyber protection there. Lou, listen, thank you very much indeed for joining us, and I really appreciate it.
Well, thanks for asking.
Now, real people, real opinions. Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
Ireland's classic hits radio.
McCarthy Insurance Group, serving the community for over 70 years. For home, farm, motor, life, health and business insurance, log on to mig.ie or free phone 1-800-50-1111. Probably your best call in 2024. Charles McCarthy Insurance is trading as McCarthy Insurance Group, is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland.